All right, everyone. Before we officially get started with this session, I would like all of us to take some time to give a huge round of warm applause for each and every one of our silver sponsors as I announce them. For those who don't know, silver sponsors have been people and companies that have committed to support CCB's annual convention this year as a $1,000 sponsor. So those are our silver sponsors. Yeah. Let's hear a warm round of applause for Vanda Pharmaceuticals, who is one of our silver sponsors. And another warm round of applause for Lainey Feingold, one of our silver sponsors. And another warm round of applause for Linda Dardarian, who is another silver sponsor. Oh, thank you so much. That is just wonderful that we have such great support. Now, before I give it over to Jean, and this is what I was looking for one thing here. We have a wonderful door prize donated to us by the Glendale Burbank chapter. Yeah. Yes, it's a wonderful, wonderful door prize. And this door prize didn't almost make it back. It is so, I love it. I want it. But remember in with CCB Women this morning, I said one of my traits is honest, so I had to bring it back. Teddy Joy said she was watching. So it is a wonderful giraffe basket. I found out it's a baby giraffe. And it's so cute, and it has all these wonderful snacks in it given to everybody by the Glendale Burbank chapter. And because of the fact that I do not have... Okay, I'm going to ask Judy a question real quick, see if she can help me with this. Okay. So, in 1934, here we go. Remember, for those that don't know how to play, call out your name so that I can recognize your name and you can try and get this answer. So this person was born in 1934. This person is a man. This person, he had interesting hair. It was kind of wild and sometimes, you know, salt and pepper. I'm sure he groomed himself, but he was a bit of an eccentric inventor. Who was it? Yes, who said that? Who said that? John Marcotte. It was Einstein. Yes. You're saying no. Wait a minute. Okay, hold on. Hold on. Hold on. Wait. Did he die in 34?
He was.
Okay, I messed up. Hold on. Give me back my giraffe. My fault. Look at that. See, I'm starting uproar. Frank, thank you. Okay, so I goofed, and this is what happens when I try to do things from memory. I reached over, and I actually leaned over and said, help me out with this one or this one. And so now I'm going to lean over to Ron.
Yeah, she did that so I couldn't win the giraffe.
Okay, the giraffe is... Okay. Nobody knows. So guess what I'm going to do, because we need to get going, and then we'll do something else. We'll do some 1934s when I pull my... Ed, we're going to go to the old way for one time. The 1934 way, Jeff said. Do you have the bucket of names? The bucket of names, because the giraffe needs to come back. Because I was wrong. That's what I get for memory. You know, but they're all older than me. Okay, where's that bucket of names? Uh-oh, Ed went away. It's a blind thing. You know what? Yeah. He took the giraffe and ran. That's what he did. Ed ran away. Do, 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 do. You know, by that time, I could have probably found my thing. Mary Lou found them. Mary Lou's going to pick names. Pick them, pick them, pick them. All righty. Who's going to get the giraffe? Let's see.
Oh, she's got to put her glasses on.
Marianne Robbins, are you in the room? Okay, next name. Next. My giraffe, Donna Pomerantz. Donna Pomerantz or Judy Wilkinson? Who? Debbie Cordero, where are you?
Is she here? No, take it.
Debbie gets the giraffe. Everybody's telling her to take it.
Take it.
Everybody yell, take it, take it.
Take it.
It's hers. And she's my sis. She won't share. All righty.
Okay.
On that note, and she won't. She's my older sister, and older sisters are mean to their baby sister sometimes. So she'll just say, look, and it's mine. All righty. I am. On that note, I wish to give this session over to... Our Vice President, Eugene Lozano, Jr.
Thank you, Donna. And I hope you've all been enjoying the conference and convention. Good. Okay, so this evening, we're going to have a lot of interesting reports, and then, of course, followed by the elections that Donna will be conducting. So... the first item, and this is a sad item that we usually have, but memoriams, and that's the first thing. And I would like to see if there's anyone who, a member of the organization, has passed since our last conference and convention, that somebody would like to come up and say a few words about them.
This is Charlene Ornelas.
Yes.
We lost Howard Kaler. He was a member of the... had been a member of the San Diego Braille Club, but he was currently a member of the San Diego chapter of the CCB. Howard had been a member for a number of years, holding a number of offices, and we will all miss him very much.
Thank you. And as people want to come up, if they come up to the microphone, and Ed will give some instructions where the microphone is, the center aisle.
Okay.
Okay.
This is Bernice. As many of you know, we lost Coletta Davis this year in January. Met Coletta when she first came to ACB in 1981. And as you know, she was a very active member of this organization. Roger and I were recently looking back through some Blind Californians. And at the 60th anniversary, she was the chair of the convention, and Ron Brooks was chair of the resolutions committee. as we all know, we'll miss Coletta very much.
Okay, these two people that I'm would like for you to remember. I don't know if they were from this organization or not, because because maybe they were before, but I need to say, because they're blind people that you probably know, and they're both vendors, and one of them was Henry Negrete. He passed away in January. And also, a very wise man that I knew, he said to me the day before he died, he said to me, if you love what you do, a couple of days before he died, he said, if you love what you do, you never work a day in your life. And that was Reese Griffith. So I just thought it was okay to mention them.
Anyone else? Okay. Then let's have a moment of silence and give thought and prayers for these individuals who have departed. Thank you. Is Pamela with us up here? Okay. The next item is our credential report, and I would like to turn it over to Pamela. Do you need a mic?
Thank you.
And also, will you announce the slate of officers that were nominated from last evening, please?
Yes, I will. And thank you, Eugene. It's really a sad thing to follow the memorial, because I get choked up even if I didn't have the pleasure of knowing these people. I know that they were very well loved and revered in the organization, and it's really hard to follow them, but we all keep them in our hearts, thoughts, and prayers, and I'll go on now. Thank you. Our slate of officers are, for president, Jeff Tom. For first vice president, Eugene Lozano Jr. For treasurer, Peter Pardini. And then we have four board of directors positions. We have on the slate are Vincent Calderon, Lena Dawes, Frank Welty, and Paul Patchy Jr. Thank you. So I'll go ahead and begin the credentials report, and I would ask, and I pray that Jean will assist me with this, please don't interrupt as I read the report, because I'm going to read the seated chapters, and then I will read the chapters who have not been seated. So if you think I've forgotten you a chapter, I have not. Okay. ACB Capital Chapter, President Paul Patchy Jr., Delegate Joni Patchy, Alternate Ruby Edgar. Number of members are 34. They have 7 votes. And for the record, I'm going to read nominating also, even though that's already occurred. Nominating is Leslie Tom. Just pray I don't knock my water over, you guys. Okay. Active Blind Inland Valleys Chapter, President Nellie Emerson, Delegate Nellie Emerson, Alternate is Edward Crespin. Number of members are 15. Voting strength is 5, and nominated committee is Nellie Emerson. Bayview Chapter, President Steve Ford, Delegate Patty Nash, Alternate Delegate Steve Ford, Number of Members 45, Voting Strength 9, Nominating Committee Steve Ford. Braille Revival League of California, President Steve Ford, Delegate Marlene O'Neill, Alternate Keith Johnson, number of members, 47, voting strength, 5, as a special interest affiliate. Nominating is Marlene O'Neill. Butte County Council, President is Lena Dawes, Delegate is Lena Dawes, Alternate none, number of members are 9, and yes, they are seated because they're in the revival grace period. The voting strength is 5, and nominating committee is Lena Dawes. California Council of Blind Students, President is Lena Dawes, Delegate is Lisa Cushman, Alternate is Anthony Signorello. Number of members are 12. Special interest, 5 votes. Nominating committee is Anthony Signorello. Thank you, Jim. California Council of the Blind, Redwood Empire Council of the Blind and Visually Impaired Chapter. And I noticed at President's Dinner, nobody from there said the whole name, but I did. Okay. President Kat Abbey, Delegate is William Gillespie, Alternate none. Number of members are 18, nominating strength 5. I'm sorry, voting strength 5, and nominating is William Gillespie. California Council of Citizens with Low Vision, President Bernice Kandarian. Let's see here. Delegate is Dan Smith. Alternate is Bernice Kandarian. Number of members are 87. Special interest, so 5 votes. Nominating committee, Bernice Kandarian. California Library Users of California, President Judy Wilkinson, Delegate is Judy Wilkinson, Alternate is none, number of members are 47, voting strength 5, and nominating committee rep is Judy Wilkinson. Okay, Contra Costa Chapter, President Gabe Griffith, Delegate is Gabe Griffith. Alternate, none. Number of members are 12. Voting strength is 5. Nominating committee rep is Gabe Griffith. East Los Angeles Chapter. President is Charles Navarrete. Delegate is Charles Navarrete. Alternate is Mona Craig. Number of members are 33. Voting strength 7, and nominating committee rep is Charles Navarrete. The Fresno Chapter of CCB, President is Nathan Romo, Delegate is Nancy Unguin, Alternate is, I can't read my writing. Can you guys help me out here? Okay, thank you. I had that, and I erased it, and I don't know what I did. Okay, so Olivia Presley. Number of members are 19. Voting strength is 5. And nominating committee is Nancy Unguin. Okay, Glendale Burbank Chapter, President is Artis Bazin, Delegate is Artis Bazin, Alternate is Vicki Parker, Number of members, are 33. Voting strength is 6, and nominating committee is Artis Bazin. Greater Bakersfield, 7. I'm sorry. Wait, let me look at something here, you guys, so we do this. Yeah, I understand, but I just want to make sure. I'm sorry, it's 31. Because we didn't have complete info, so that's why I said, sorry. Greater Bakersfield Council of the Blind, president is Penny Valdivinos, delegate is Dane Gear, alternate is Paul Leong, number of members are 21, voting strength 5, and nominating committee, John Ross. Greater Lakewood Chapter, who is a new chapter to be chartered, president is Michelle Burnett, delegate Charles Register, alternate delegate none, a number of members are 16, voting strength 5, and nominating committee with Charles Register. Greater Los Angeles Chapter, president is Pamela Metz, delegate is Pam Hill Metz, alternate none, number of members 17, voting strength 5, nominating committee Pamela Metz. Guide Dogs Users of California, president Frank Welty, delegate is Vita Zavali, alternate is Daryl Dawes, number of members are 37, voting strength 5 as a special interest, and nominated committee Vita Zavali. Orange County Chapter, delegate is Andrea Pitzenbarger, delegate is Gail Crossan, alternate delegate Andrea Pitzenbarger, number of members are 19, voting strength is 5, and nominating committee is Andrea Pitzenbarger. Orientation Center of the Blind Alumni Association, president Judy Wilkinson, delegate Donna Sanchez, alternate Sylvia Reese, number of members are 13, voting strength is 5, nominating committee is Jane Cardis. Randolph Shepherd Vendors of California, president David Hanlon, here goes my writing again. Delegate Paul Patchy Sr., alternate none, number of members are 12, voting strength is 5, and nominating committee is Joni Patchy. San Diego Braille Club Chapter, president is Jacqueline Jackson, delegate is Charlene Ornelas, alternate is Joseph Lopez, number of members are 22, voting strength is 5, and nominating committee is Joseph Lopez. San Francisco Chapter, president is Frank Welty, delegate is Linda Perel, alternate is David Jackson, thank you, number of members are 34, voting strength 7, and nominating committee is Frank Welty. San Gabriel Valley Chapter, president is Pamela Apology, delegate is Albert Contreras, alternate is none, number of members are 49. Thank you. 10 votes. Voting strength is 10, and nominating committee is Albert Contreras. Silicon Valley Council of the Blind chapter, President Rob Turner, Delegate Mike Keithley, alternate is Alice McGrath. Number of members are 79. He's in there too. Voting strength is 16, and nominated committee is Alice McGrath. Solano County Council of the Blind Chapter, President Betty Christensen, Delegate Diane Phelps, Alternate Delegate Sandy Nelson, number of members are 18, voting strength is 5, nominating committee rep is Diane Phelps. So I'm going to now read the chapters who are not seated. Okay. Alameda County Chapter, Antelope Valley Chapter, Association for Multicultural Concerns, Coachella Valley Chapter, Compton Chapter, Golden Gate Chapter, Greater Long Beach Chapter, High Desert Chapter, Humboldt Chapter, Inland Empire Chapter, San Bernardino Chapter, San Diego Chapter, San Mateo Chapter, and Yosemite Gateway Chapter. So that concludes this portion of the report.
Is there a motion to a... Okay. Discussion. Yes, Connie.
I think we should ask if any of these chapters representatives have come since the credentials meeting.
May I respond?
Please.
Connie, I made an announcement this afternoon in the general session that I was willing to allow leniency if anyone would come see me, even though they weren't hit there last night, and I received no responses. Therefore, I believe that this report should stand.
Any further discussion? Okay, who made the motion? There were several people. Okay, who wants to take responsibility for seconding? Charlene, I heard you, Charlene, first. Thank you.
Does she have the floor or what?
For asking for the identification. Okay. Those in favor say aye. What?
Seaport's raising his hand but not saying anything.
Okay.
Are you recognizing someone, Mr. Chair?
Yes, I guess Steve.
Okay.
I did not hear anyone speak. That's the reason I did not know.
I'm sorry. Marlene O'Neill, the Braille Revival League of California delegate, has fallen ill. She's here at the hotel but cannot come down tonight. Therefore, our alternate delegate, Keith Johnson, will serve as the delegate.
Well, he can serve as the alternate. That's what he's alternate for.
Okay, is there any other discussion? Anyone would like to discuss the report? Is there anyone?
Mike,
yes, we have one over here.
Yes, I recognize whoever it is.
Hi, I'm just curious. By my count, there are 14 chapters that weren't seated. Now, how much of that, what proportion is that to the total number of chapters in CCB? Thank you.
It's really irrelevant, and I'm not going to count them because I'm just going to take everybody's time. The number that are seated aren't going to affect the number that isn't.
Okay, who off to my right is asking for the floor and if they get a mic?
No, I this is Rob Turner. I think Mike was just trying to kind of have us face a difficult situation that, you know, we've had more. I think this is a record number of chapters that haven't been seated. And I agree it's not germane to the final report, however.
Yes. So we want to, if there's anything germane to the actual report itself. Okay, I'm not hearing that anyone else wants to discuss this. Those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Nays? Abstentions? Okay, the ayes have it. Thank you.
Mr. Chair?
Yes.
To add a little levity, may I take one moment?
Please.
Thank you. Being that this is in the Easter season, Jesus and his disciples are seated at the Last Supper. Judas betrayed him. Peter ran off. I'm sorry, Judas betrayed him, and Peter denied him three times. So the waiter comes up to Jesus and gives him the check, and Jesus says, "Separate checks, please." Thank you.
Okay, we move on now.
I resent that. It was on my own volition, Jeff, by whatever rising or standing on its merit.
Okay. Well, this evening, we're very honored to not only have one of the three silver sponsors to be Vanna Pharmaceuticals, but also to them to have provided us with this evening's speaker. Our speaker is their Vanna Pharmaceuticals medical scientific liaison with the medical profession and in education. And she has a doctorate degree from the University of Michigan, specializing in sleep and in immunity. Put in several years at the National Fibromyalgia. Yeah, thank you, Association, and held several positions there. And has over 6 years of experience in the pharmaceutical field. She has come here this evening to give us an update on the status of the non-24-hour sleep-wake disorder and new treatment that has just been approved within the last few months. So let's give a hand to Dr. Melissa Overdodioti. I asked for her apologies before I tried it.
Thank you. Thank you, Jean, and thank you everyone for having me. I can't tell you how thrilled I am to be here and speak with you today. And also thank you to the California Council for the Blind to have me to speak and give me the opportunity. So my name is Dr. Melissa Oliva Doty, and I work, as Jean mentioned, in medical affairs at Vanda Pharmaceuticals. And basically I'm going to speak today about non-24 sleep-wake disorder. To give you some background about me, I have a PhD in neuroscience, just like Jean mentioned, and therefore I'm a scientist by training. So unfortunately, I'm not able to answer any questions regarding specific symptoms. However, if you have questions of that nature, I encourage you to speak with your physician. If you have specific questions about non-24, I'm happy to answer those questions at the end. We should have some time for that. I also work for Vanda Pharmaceuticals, as Jean mentioned. So just a disclaimer that my company does have a product for the treatment of non-24 that is commercially available today. But I'm only going to talk about the disease state. Okay, I'd like to start with talking about circadian rhythms, so we have a background before I jump into non-24, because non-24 is a circadian rhythm disorder. I'm sure at some point most of you have heard the word circadian before, and broken down, if you haven't, broken down, circa means about or around, and dies means day. So basically taken together, it means about a day. So that refers to the processes in our body that fluctuate throughout the day at a specific time every day. Some of you may have experienced a circadian process, like getting hungry at the same time of day. I know I can set my clock by the time my tummy rumbles at 8 a.m. And that's your way, your stomach's way of telling you that it's time to eat. So today we'll talk about what circadian rhythms are and what happens when the body's rhythm is out of alignment with the sun or the environmental day or night, such as in non-24. So circadian rhythms are built into our body and are adjusted or synchronized, so what we call synchronized, to the environmental day by certain time givers. And the primary one is daylight. It was discovered a long time ago that we have internal circadian rhythms, and that in the absence of light, that this circadian rhythm is longer than 24 hours. So light every day resets our body clock. However, if you don't have light input into your body clock, that basically your body clock shifts a little bit every day. And that's going to be dependent on your biology, how much it shifts. Some people shift by 10 minutes a day. Some people shift by up to an hour a day. So we know that there are unique cells and pathways responsible for the resetting of this circadian clock inside the brain, because we have to get light to that central part of the brain, right? So there's specific pathways and genes that are responsible for internal clocks that have been found as well. So we'll talk today about these pathways and what happens when they don't receive light cues. So like I mentioned before, our bodies run on slightly longer than a 24-hour cycle, depending on your physiology, without light. It's about 24 and a half hours on average, so 0.5 hours a day. And light's the main cue that our body uses to reorient to our environmental day. So just like our ears have two functions, we use them for hearing and balance, our eyes actually serve two functions as well. Not only do they send information on vision to our brain, but they also send information on light and darkness to reset our body clock every single day. So light travels from our eyes to the master body clock in our brain, also called the big word here, suprachiasmatic nucleus. You'll be quizzed on that later, or what we call the SCN. So whenever I say SCN, just think of master body clock, which then tells all the other clocks in our body to realign. Now, we have clocks in every single cell of our body. It's pretty interesting. And in every organ. So think of the body like an orchestra. Each cell and each organ has its own cycle, and the conductor at the front makes sure that they are all on the same timing. And that's this SCN, this master body clock. It allows us to stay aligned to the 24-hour day instead of advancing about, say, a half hour up to an hour per day. So without light input, our natural body clock timing will take over, which could mean advances of minutes to almost an hour per day. So in the brain, the master body clock controls the timing of critical important functions in the body, such as sleep, wakefulness, and mood, as well as release of certain hormones and body temperature changes. So at night, our body is trying to get ready for bed if you're entrained. And so basically darkness signals to our body for it to calm down and get ready for bed, whereas light inhibits those processes, so it helps us stay awake. So our bodies are also tuned to eat at specific times of the day and have everything calm at night. So if you force your body to do things against your natural circadian rhythm time, you may end up with problems in one or all of these systems. You may have issues with GI problems or blood pressure, things like that. So our physiology is not constant throughout the day because we have to change what we're doing, either sleep, eat, be awake, things like that. And so they're variable, but they're variable in a predictable way if you can be entrained by light. So daily cycles of behavior such as alertness, memory, mood, and core body temperature, like I mentioned before, and other hormones are also in tune with this body clock, and there's progressive changes throughout the day. Our brain coordinates this circadian rhythms of hormones, how alert we are, and from our master body clock. So basically, this is located in the central part of our brain. Light information activates specialized cell in the back of the eye, in the retina, which sends signals to the master body clock to inhibit sleep. Darkness signals our body to sleep through different changes in hormones and brain activity. So signals on the time of the day from the brain are transmitted to all the other tissues in the body through hormones. And these signals act on all tissues and organs to reset these clocks in the body. So think of this like the atomic clock in Colorado resetting all the digital watches in the U.S. So in addition to light, melatonin is important in resetting our body clock and changing circadian rhythms. But light is the strongest activator. I can't say that enough. So there's certain things like birds chirping in the morning that tell you it's morning, and keeping forcing a constant bedtime are helpful, but they're not enough to reset the circadian clock in most people. That's pretty important. So even if you try sleeping the same time every night, if your body's not ready for sleep, if it's advancing every night and it's not in tune with what you're trying to do, it's going to fight you, right? So basically, if we don't have light input, our body clock takes over, and so we would advance about, say, if my body clock's about a half hour per night, tonight I go to bed at midnight. Tomorrow night I don't want to go to bed at 12:30. Now, basically, in 48 days or in 24 days from now, my body clock will be completely switched with the environmental day. That's going to be tough on me, right? So I'm going to have trouble sleeping during the night or staying awake during the day. So non-24 sleep-wake disorder occurs in the totally blind and is a circadian rhythm disorder that is due to abnormal input with a pathway responsible for resetting this clock. So basically, your brain is not receiving light input. So while 924 is a circadian rhythm disorder, basically, patients' sleep may suffer. So sleep complaints are one of the main symptoms, even though this isn't necessarily a sleep disorder like insomnia. So basically, this means that people with a disorder will be trying to eat and sleep at times when their body clock is not aligned. So in totally blind patients, while the master body clock is intact, they cannot sense light to reset this body clock. So this wouldn't be a problem if you could set your own schedule, right, in totally blind people. But of course, people with non-24, you have families, you have jobs, you have lives, you have social commitments. And therefore, basically, people with non-24 are trying to conform to the 24-hour day and are constantly fighting their biological rhythms when they're out of alignment with the environmental day. So they may try to sleep when their body clock wants them to be awake and vice versa. So they may have problems sleeping at night, staying awake during the day, which may interfere with activities of daily living. So So basically, when my body clock would be out of alignment, I would have problems sleeping at night, so I may have problems falling asleep, staying asleep. I may take naps during the day to catch up for lost sleep, even while I'm in phase, while I'm in alignment with the day. And so it depends on where you are in your quote-unquote cycle, whether you're in line with the day or you're, 12 hours off. That will depend on symptoms. So some people have the ability to restrict sleep during their nighttime hours, but it's something that very few people with non-24 can do because of they try to do it because of their schedules, but very few people can actually do this because it's a constant fight against their biological clock. All right. So this greatly affects normal daily function. I know if I don't get my 8 hours sleep, I'm a very grumpy goose. So I'm sure you guys know how that feels as well. So this is a serious disorder with long-term circadian rhythm implications occurring in nearly 70% of patients who are totally blind and have a sleep complaint. Yeah, 70%. That's a pretty high percentage. So the duration to fall back into alignment may be as short as 1 month or as long as a year, depending on how long your cycles are. Based on the criteria for a diagnosis, your doctor, if you go to your doctor for this, they may request that you keep a sleep log or an activity monitor. But because the prevalence is so high in people who are totally blind with a sleep complaint at 70%, it's not required for diagnosis. And many people impacted with this disorder don't even know they have this issue with their master body clock. They may have gotten diagnosed with insomnia or some other sleep problem or some other health problem. So we've heard from patients that with non-24 that have been diagnosed that there is a great deal of validation they feel when the disorder is correctly identified, because nobody wants to be falling asleep in meetings at work. You are not people who, you know, you are very capable people. You are not lazy. Trust me, I know. So in conclusion, non-24 circadian rhythm disorder that is very common in totally blind patients, and because of lack of input to the master body clock with light, doesn't reset to the 24-hour day. Therefore, the person advances a little bit every day, depending on their internal timing system, and may not be able to sleep at night, may have problems staying awake during the day. So I definitely want to thank you again for having me speak with you. I'm happy to answer questions. I'm not sure how much time we have, but there's also more information on our website. I have my cards to contact me, but also you can visit www.non-24.com to sign up for more information if you'd like more information about the treatment that's available.
Mr. Chair, Frank Welty.
Yes, Frank. Thank you, Doctor. That was most informative.
Thank you.
Of the handful of top sleep research centers or sleep clinics in the country, can you suggest what some of those are, particularly if some in that top flight handful are here in California?
That is a great question, and you guys have some of the top researchers and clinicians here. I would say the best way to find out for your local doctors would be to go to I believe it's the American Academy for Sleep Medicine website, if you have a computer, and can look up sleep centers that are approved. And that would be a great way. These people are going to be the people that know about circadian rhythm disorders, and we're educating them as much as possible. So that's one way to find someone who's knowledgeable. If you sign up with our hub, which is the Non-24 website, or the number, you may have heard our ads on radio or heard them on TV. If you sign up and give your doctor information, we will contact your doctor and talk to them about this. So that's another way to make sure that your personal doctor has information.
Yes.
Judy? Doctor, you probably won't know the answer to this question, but I'm glad you mentioned those ads because I am so curious. The one I hear most says, you know, I'm a blind person. You probably don't usually hear blind people on the radio. And I would love to know if a blind actress was actually hired to do that ad. And if so, I'd love to know who it is. And if not, if they ever do the ad again, I hope a blind person would be hired to do ads like that. Thank you.
That is a fabulous question. And I'm happy to report that all of our ads on radio are all done by patients who have been diagnosed with non-24, and they're part of our advocacy group from Vanda Pharmaceuticals that talk to sales and marketing and other groups about their experience. So these are people who have the disorder. I believe the commercials are done by actors and actresses, but they're also all totally blind. Yeah. Yeah, we are 100% dedicated to the patient experience. We want to make sure that you get your needs met, that if you get to your doctor that they're knowledgeable, and that you have everything you need to get the care that you need. Okay.
Another question. I have a question. Yes.
to what degree does physical activity have an effect on non-24?
That is a fabulous question. So a lot of doctors may suggest that you have activity at specific times of the day, and that you have sleep at specific times, so you set a schedule, and that you have physical activity at certain time points. That is what they call a weak time giver. So it is possible to help the body, but really, if you are totally blind and have no light input, it is not enough to entrain your body.
Ron, Chris, I have a question. Didn't you say that there was some recent research and breakthroughs? I didn't hear you mention that.
Oh, okay. So the recent breakthroughs kind of happened, I think, around 2005 to 2007. And in non-24, and basically it helped us understand the background biology and physiology of what cells in the eye basically cause this information to go to the brain. So we didn't know about these cells in the eye that transmit light. We always kind of knew that light does affect the master body clock, but no one up until that point knew that it was specific cells in the eye, not rods or cones, but these specific cells that can transmit light information even, without basically separate than the system that basically is used for vision. Yeah.
Yep.
Now, Bron Brooks.
Uh-huh. So just a couple of questions relating to light perception. A lot of people who are blind or visually impaired have minimal light perception. Mm-hmm. And I'm curious how much light perception is needed because I, for example, am a person with very minimal light perception, and I definitely have some, but I definitely also from time to time have different kinds of sleep disorders or mm-hmm. sleep troubles. Mm-hmm. The other question I would have is how do you distinguish between non-24 if you're a likely candidate versus some of the other sleep disorders to which any person could also be susceptible?
Those are fantastic questions. So unfortunately, I don't have a perfect answer for the first question. There is not like a threshold where it's all or none. It's kind of a sliding scale. So it would depend on how much light input gets into your brain. And unfortunately, we can't quantify that at this point in time. However, to know if you have the important part about non-24 is that your doctor would need to rule out other sleep disorders first. So, that may mean going into a sleep lab and getting diagnosed for other things. And once you're treated for those, if you still have sleep disorder problems, then basically they would consider non-24. So unfortunately, there's a little bit of legwork to do and to see if you have symptoms for other ones. If you don't, then this would be a likely candidate.
Do you have one more here, Jean? Is it? We have one more, Jean?
Could a person with a partial retina damage have these cells destroyed?
It's possible. So it would depend on where in their retina they had damage. So these cells are actually in the very front part, whereas your vision comes from rods and cones in the very back part of the retina. So it really depends on where the damage is and how extensive it is. So If the person has these type of symptoms, I would just encourage them to talk to their doctor.
Is there another question?
One more in the back.
And also to that point, I just want to reiterate, the symptoms are having trouble staying awake during the day, feeling the need to sleep, and having trouble sleeping at night.
Okay.
In different times.
I really felt that I was a candidate for the study because I had quite a bit of light perception when I was born, lost it with each child that I carried, and knew as soon as I lost enough of it that, my sleep was completely disrupted. And I was told that I couldn't participate. This is embarrassing, but that I couldn't participate because I weighed too much. So does that mean the drug won't work for me if I need it?
That is a fabulous question. And the thing is, how many of us actually fit into that perfect BMI that they're looking for? Not a whole lot of us, right? So basically, your body mass index in clinical studies has to be within a certain range, and that's just for clinical studies. However, your weight, you know, it shouldn't be an issue. But I apologize that you weren't able to participate. But if this is something you think you should be a candidate for, I would definitely talk to your doctor about it. Because, you know, just because you couldn't be in the study does not mean that you may not be a candidate. So I would definitely talk to your doctor. You should be fine.
This is Bonnie. My question really has to do with maybe a delicate one. The tasimelteon, we read something about it in the forum, so it has been mentioned, advocating for it to get approved. Mm-hmm. I'm concerned that, especially now that I'm not working and I really know I can't afford it, I'm a total poster child for it, but I wonder, you know, you guys have got to make your money back. And the issue of cost, insurance companies approving of it, and I'm sure if they don't approve of it, we're not going to be able to afford. And I'm sure you guys thought about this before you did the research, so if you could respond to anything that you care to. Thank you.
Absolutely. Thank you again for that question. So the most important thing is access of care, right? That's what's going to be important to anyone who gets a script for this drug. And we understand that, you know, it can be an expensive drug. It's for a smaller population of people, about, you know, 80 to 90,000 people total in the United States. But Vanda has said again and again that they are committed to the patients, to getting them help if they need it for their copays. Okay, so we are working nonstop right now, giving presentations to organizations for insurance to make sure that they get people get proper coverage. And then beyond that, if you end up getting a script and call into our hub, which, you know, you'll have that information if your doctor does decide to prescribe, they will work through different pathways to make sure that you can afford your medication. The last thing we want someone to do is to get diagnosed, get that script, and then not be able to afford this important treatment. So I can't tell you numbers because it would depend on the person, but we are dedicated all the way up to the CEO. He even says this at our meetings, that he wants to make sure that anyone who gets this script can afford this medication.
Okay. How do I turn that on? Hello?
Was there one more person?
Hello? That's a beautiful segue into my next question, because if what I'm hearing you saying, then the drug is currently available and beyond FDA trial periods?
Yes, this is correct. So we got FDA approval on January 31st, and today was the first day that it would be commercially available through a specialty pharmacy.
So with that in mind, how does people that are with HMOs like Kaiser and Blue Shield, et cetera, get them to accept providing that to us? Could you go through that again?
Yeah, no problem. So that is actually what I'm doing next week, is talking to Kaiser. So all of us on my team at Medical Affairs are working diligently to talk to these insurance companies to make sure that they have all the information they need to put that on their formulary. So if you go in and get this script, that it will be covered. That's our main goal right now. Because it's available, we want to make sure that patients can get coverage.
Okay. And I'm going to ask the last few questions. Can you tell me on your list if you have Hill's physicians? They seem to be one of the most conservative ones out here that don't like to give anything. And I would like to then approach them to see about getting for myself and others. Can you provide us with a list of publications, medical publications that doctors would read that we could, bibliography, I guess, that we could take to them, in addition to some of the literature you might get through when we call in, but the doctors you know, when talking to him, I think the only way to convince him is actually seeing in a medical journal that and that's recognized as a legit publication. Can you provide us something like that?
Absolutely. So first things first, I have these doctors on my list now. Thank you, Gene. Mm-hmm. So they're going to be somebody that I target to talk to since they're such a big provider up here. Okay. And for the information, so we don't have publications just yet on the clinical trials. Those should come out in a few months because since it was just approved, it takes a while to get things published. So far, we have presented this information at medical meetings. But there is, if the doctor wants information, one of the ways is to refer them to our website. And that actually, there is a website just for doctors with the information that they may need. The other thing is to call Vanda Pharmaceuticals and they can give them all the information that they require because that would be funneled to a person like me who would go in and talk to the doctor specifically. If you end up getting a script or even just want to call into the hub because you think you have these specific symptoms for non-24, you can consent to give your doctor's information, and we are working long and hard on this as well to contact these doctors and educate them before you go in so that they're not blindsided, you know, like with a new medication, oh, I don't know anything about it. So there's several ways that you can get information to them via website, call into our hub, or have the doctor call Vanda.
Okay, just want to ask one more question. Okay. The other thing is, you mentioned the website for the doctors. Mm-hmm. Is that, do medical students and nursing students, can they get access to that?
Absolutely.
I talked to Sac State's nursing department, a few of their classes, and this is something they have become very interested in learning about here. So, and these are people that are going to be working with patients with it in the future. So, if so, is there a way that you could just tell us what that website address is that so we could tell these departments?
Absolutely. So I actually have some cards with Braille on it if anyone's interested in taking this to their doctor. It's www.non-24pro.com. That is available to any healthcare provider, and it also has the number where they can reach out to our company if they have further questions. Yeah. There you go. Here. There we go. And also, if you have more questions, I'm hanging around. Okay, and I'll be hanging around afterwards, so if you have a question later or if you didn't get your question answered, I'm happy to stay here. And I also have my cards that have Braille on them as well with my contact information.
Yes, go ahead.
Thank you.
Okay. You mentioned Kaiser, and I had a really weird experience with them when I tried to get a sleep study. When I called, they seemed kind of disconnected when I told them I was totally blind, and they said, well, you come to your appointment, and we'll give you a watch, and you go home and go to sleep, and it'll tell you how many times you've breathed. And it was like, of course, that you had a sleep problem. And it was like a print watch wasn't going to do me any good, and it was like the whole sleep study sounded like such a farce. And Kaiser used to hook you up to the electrodes, and they do a lot more to see what what kind of a sleep problem you had. But now that this test, how do you cope with that kind of thing with Kaiser? Because they just don't seem to offer what they used to offer in terms of sleep testing.
That's a fabulous question. So going back to your first question, it depends on how sleep doctors go about what they do. Sometimes they'll bring you in, say if you have one type of sleep disorder, they'll bring you in, hook you up to a bunch of things, and have you sleep in a sleep lab. If they think you have something else, they may give you what's called an actigraph, which is a little watch that shows how much activity you do when you sleep, when you're awake. So I think we're hoping that we can get this through Kaiser so that they don't require any type of testing, but they may. So it will just depend on what your doctor decides to do for you and what criteria they use. So I don't have a great answer for you at this point, but all I can say is it will depend. But those testing, the testing for that is recommended. It's not required by this diagnostic criteria. So we're hoping that based upon the diagnostic criteria that we have, you won't have to jump through those hoops, but you may, depending on your doctor, depending on your plan.
Okay, thank you. I have two very quick questions. One, how long were the clinical trials for? And two, what about side effects that came about from those?
Okay, two fabulous questions. So the clinical trials, there's several of them. We have data on over 1,600 people that have taken at least one dose of this medication. And basically almost 90 people have been on this medication for as long as a year. We also know about what happens when you go off the medication as well. And we can talk about those later once the session is over. But so there's quite a bit of data through these clinical trials. The main side effects that were found was headache, some liver enzymes that were a little bit higher, but not anything for cause for concern. Oddly, abnormal dreams, maybe nightmares, which is kind of interesting because you're finally getting that rest that you need. You're getting into that REM sleep, right? And then also some lower 5% were upper respiratory and urinary tract infections. But headache and those infections are very common in clinical trials, and the liver enzymes are very common for a drug that is processed through the liver. So there's no cause for concern for, there's no black box warning. It's a very safe medication. Thankfully, it makes my job a lot easier talking to doctors. And so the FDA didn't give us any massive warnings other than somnolence, which is basically it'll make you sleepy, which is what we hope it will do anyway. But it can take up to 3 to 4 months, maybe longer, to take effect, because we have to hit a sweet spot in your cycle where you're aligned with the day. And so that can take a while to do.
What is this medication called?
It is called Hetlioz, H-E-T-L-I-O-Z. Hetlioz. It's H-E-T-L-I-O-Z.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you again. Like I said, I'll be sticking around afterwards, so if you want to ask more questions, feel free to come up. I'm up at the front. And you can call me Melissa.
Melissa.
Unfortunately, no, there are no samples. I'm sorry.
Melissa, just let me, because some people are going to probably ask, if you already maybe have been diagnosed with sleep apnea and it has gone through all the testing and it hasn't, and the CPACs don't seem to help you at all, that wouldn't negate you possibly being considered for treatment using your company's medication, would it?
No. So if you
had another diagnosis that they felt that you had, but yet you still, with all the treatment they give you, doesn't make any difference. You still have it. That wouldn't cancel you possibly considered.
Can I steal the microphone? Thank you. So this is a fabulous question. If you have another sleep disorder and they've treated it, and you still are having these symptoms, if you've been treated, then they can rule it out. So that means that you may still have, you know, some problem with sleep disorder, breathing at night. But if you've been treating that and you're still having these symptoms, you would be a candidate. So as long as you've been treated for your other sleep disorders, if it's not working properly, if you're still having these symptoms of falling asleep during the day and not being able to sleep at night, then you are a great candidate to go to your doctor to talk about NON24 with them.
Great. Okay. Jeff, Tom, Government Affairs report.
shout. Ah, there we go. Okay, so I just wanted to follow up with one brief comment. If you do run into a situation where your prescribing physician does think that you are a viable candidate, and your insurer, either public or private, is denying you, obviously your first call should be to Vanda. But if you want, you can also call us to do some advocacy, because that's one of the things this organization should be trying to do for its members. I mean, it doesn't, you know, we can't say that you are a good candidate or not, but we can certainly say this is a, you know, excellent drug for a particular disorder, and we can certainly go to insurance companies and do our best. So certainly feel free if it's your desire to, you know, call this organization for assistance in that area too. So, okay. I'm going to do a few different things tonight. I'm going to go over what we've been doing this year a little bit, governmental affairs-wise. I'm going to go over a couple of things for some federal legislation, a couple pieces of federal legislation, and then I'm going to go over the resolutions that we had last year and follow up on some of those. So, this week was our, I don't know what number it is, but it was our Capitol Day, I'm thrilled to say. I'm also thrilled to say that the day after Capitol Day, and Steve Fort, you brought it up, and I can at least say I did it several hours before you brought it up. I did update the governmental affairs report. It should have been done long ago, but it's now updated, so that's good. And the Capitol Day was just wonderful. I know I'm going to forget some people. I'll try to list them all. Diane Deutsch, Debbie Cordero, Deborah Thompson, Gigi DeMarie was supposed to be in it, but unfortunately she is ill in the hospital, and we wish her the best. Bill Gillespie, Frank Welty, Dirk Neihardt, Charles Navarrete, Teddy Joy Remhill. Did I get everybody done? Jane Cardis. Yes, of course. How could I forget Jane? I knew I'd forget somebody. They did an outstanding job. everybody saw a whole boatload of folks. And I'm going to go over the issues that we, the Governmental Affairs Committee decided, plus one that Donna and I added, were our four major issues for the year. The first one is AB 1703. That is a bill by Assemblymember Isidore Hall from Southern California. Hopefully we can get him at our next convention. It is our bill, and it would add in reading and completion of documents as a service for in-home supportive services recipients that have a disability that precludes them from, you know, reading and filling out documents. This is something that should have been in the program since it started, but it isn't. And we've had a really good coalition with the United Domestic Workers, who asked if they could co-sponsor the bill. We have complete control over the language, but they've gone around with us to members' offices and written letters. We've had other groups that have come in as well in support of the bill, including NFB. And so we've had a lot of support. We are taking some amendments that the committee has requested to keep Appropriations Committee. We already passed our first committee, but we've taken amendments to make sure that the bill's costs are kept down. And we are confident. Teddy Joy had a good meeting the other day with Mr. Gatto, the chair of Appropriations, and another of his constituents, our erstwhile president, is going to beat on his door next week, I think, and make sure that we continue to get his support. So we think we're going to get it through the assembly, and then we're going to have a meeting with the governor's office, and hopefully, unlike Mr. Schwarzenegger, hopefully we can convince Mr. Brown to pass this bill. Yes. So, the second issue is AB 1602. It is not one of our bills. It is a bill by Assemblymember Patterson. It was a bill that one of the roadside rest vendors, just to show you how individuals can affect things, he went to his own assemblyman in the Valley, a Republican in the Central Valley, said, we got this problem. You know, people are getting put out of business because they have to pay utilities instead of Caltrans paying for the utilities at roadside rest stops where blind vendors have these vending machines at roadside rests along highways. And some member said, hey, that sounds great. Let's have Caltrans pay it instead. He introduced a bill. So far, there is no opposition from either party. And it looks like it will sail through. And, you know, obviously, they'll have to make sure that the governor goes for it. Again, it's had, you know, all blindness organizations are working hard for it. And so we hope that it will, certainly we hope that it will pass. The third of our imperatives that the Governmental Affairs Committee decided we would tackle is one that Donna and I and Bernice and others have been dealing with and having headaches over. And with Donna, it's literally headaches because she has to try and look at the small font. We have been, and not just us, there have been others in other groups, but we have been beating up the Department of Healthcare Services to provide materials to Medi-Cal recipients for several years, and they're slowly starting to do a little bit here and a little bit there, but nothing in a comprehensive mode at all, and no way to identify the people who really need it so that they know that they can even get it, if indeed they can get it. Unfortunately, the large print font is a smaller size than it needs to be, but if they did get it, it would be better than nothing. But that was another area where we were sort of subverted a little bit, I guess you'd say. So we finally decided, look, we need to have our legislators put some pressure on the Department of Healthcare Services to really work on this issue, because this is, you know, Medi-Cal is the second biggest budgetary program in this state to education. And it is a mortal sin that the materials for, you know, eligibility and other things, including in-home supportive services, which is funded mostly by Medi-Cal now and is a part of the Medi-Cal program, are not provided in accessible formats. It's a state law, it's a federal law, and yet it's not being done. So we are hoping maybe we can get a little pressure put on the department to step up its activities and really do something comprehensive in this area. The final one was something we didn't even know about until maybe a month ago, and it has really caused a great deal of alarm and concern, and that is that the governor's proposed very innocuously in his budget, because I don't think they knew what they were doing, to funnel some money away from the state to the local school districts. Unfortunately, the money they wanted to funnel away is the money that sets up this unit in the Department of Education to produce Braille and large print books. So, well, what's the problem with that? Maybe the school districts can do it themselves, or maybe they can pay a fee to the state to do it. Well, that's all easily said, but it isn't easily done. For example, the state currently has this big warehouse full of Braille and large print books. And whenever the districts don't want them anymore, they mail them back, and then they send them out to a new school district to use them. So what would happen to that warehouse if the money was funneled away? It would just sit there, and no one would ever send a book out of there or put a new one in there when they got mailed back. Then, of course, we have the fact that the state knows how to bid at cost for bulk purchasing to get the best prices for Braille and large print books. And they also know who to go to get specialized transcription services for science, math, foreign language type books that I don't think any of us could do very well in this room. But they know the folks who can do it. So many times they're out-of-state folks, and sometimes they're very small transcribers in the state that specialize in a certain area. Are the school districts going to know that? Maybe LA Unified is. Well, maybe they wouldn't. But certainly, Glenn County isn't, or you know, Modoc or whatever. How are they going to know how to get these books done for their one student? So Donna and I began You know, somebody had to take on, you know, the Department of Education said we oppose this, but, you know, I have to say they haven't really done too much to, you know, fight to make their opposition heard very well. So somebody had to do it. And, you know, we decided we had to be the ones to take this on if nobody else was going to do it. And we did. Donna and I started with the Assembly Budget Committee, met with several other folks and communicated with others. Ralph Black, who represents another entity but is also a CCB member, and I met with the governor's office. And then at Capitol Day, a number of us went around to various representatives. And we have gotten, I think, a lot of traction. Even the governor's office was like, well, we just thought we were putting some money into the school's hands. We didn't know we were doing anything. So hopefully, you know, and you never can tell because sometimes they say nice things and they don't do them, but hopefully they really will start to understand that they're creating a monster and a disaster for blind and low vision students who will get, who will probably not get their books in a timely manner and who will probably get crummy, poor quality books as well. So we're trying to solve that situation. And if you have chances to talk to your local legislators, assembly members and senators, keep the pressure on. It's going to be part of the budget battle. You know, we hope that the governor will back off, but, you know, once the train starts rolling, it takes some real push to stop the train, as they say. So we want to get that train back into the station before a disaster strikes, because what's really going to, it will be bad enough this year when the lending warehouse goes away. But when the Common Core standards kick in a year or two and they have to start buying all these new books, oh boy, we're going to have an absolute disaster. So let me talk about two pieces of legislation, and then quickly I want to talk about some resolutions from last year. We have two pieces of federal legislation that the American Council of Blind is working on, H.R. 3749, something which the immediate past president of the American Council of the Blind and one of our past presidents, who's probably somewhere out in the audience there, was a real, who's retired now, I understand, who's retired from everything, he says. Now, Mitch was really one of the movers and shakers behind getting this going. We want to establish a 5-year pilot Medicare program to give a chance for low vision aids costing more than $500 to be placed into the hands of Medicare recipients who need them. To see, yes, isn't that great? That is great. And it's getting some traction already. Its chances of passing this year are probably not great, just because the chances of Congress doing anything this year are probably not great. But you gotta start it, and you gotta keep pushing, and eventually, you know, you work through it. And this is the sort of thing I think that a lot of our local providers, whether it's the Lighthouse or the Society for the Blind or, you know, other places that have low vision clinics, should be supporting, because it's money in their pockets. So, and we do, of course, we're working with a lot of other entities like American Foundation for the Blind on this bill and a lot of other provider organizations. The other one is H.R. 40. Yeah, let me just finish. I'll try to be really quick, and you can. Let me just finish. H.R. 4040 is called the Alice Cogswell and Sullivan Macy Act. It is a comprehensive bill on education of blind children. It's probably a work in progress because it is going to take a while to educate those on the Hill to the needs that our population has, but every opportunity we have to fight for it, we absolutely can. Okay, let me quickly, because I do want to save time for one or two questions if I can, quickly go through these resolutions, because Sunday I know will be crowded. Okay, from last year, resolution A2 was on cycle tracks. And those are these things they want to, lanes they want to put where the bikes go between the parked cars and the curb, and you know, you might get hit by a bike or whatever. And we, Donna and Gene and I, have had some discussions with the bicycle community, at least educating them a little bit to our concerns. A bill did not get passed, at least on this, which was something. It's still something that a large segment of the bicycle community loves and is fighting for. And it's you know, it's ongoing. But we at least have had discussions. A3. This is on the puppy raising and training practices, concerns we have for guide dogs for the blinds, puppy raising and training practices. I don't have too much comments on that. That's probably something really for GDUC to work on more than our, you know, governmental affairs committee. So we might want to ask those folks what if anything has happened. Number five of A5 was on PDF documents to make the default setting, to make the accessible setting as the default. And Donna worked directly with Adobe on this, and they were analyzing it and looking into the problem. I don't think they've officially changed their position yet, but she certainly educated them, and they did acknowledge there was an issue. Don, do you have anything more than that, or is that about where we...
Also forwarded.
Oh, yes, that's right.
Go ahead. ACB.
Yes, we did. We forwarded it to ACB, who did adopt something on that, I think. Thank you. The sixth one was one that somehow I failed to implement, and when I realized that, I'm pretty embarrassed. It's to inform the Judicial Council of our failure to provide jury of the failure of certain county courts to provide jury accommodations. And so we are going to make sure that gets done by the end of the month. I will make sure a letter gets drafted. I can't believe it slipped through, but it did, and I apologize on that. B1. Actually, B2 is the first one. I take that back. B1. B1 is on the guide dog board. And various issues we want handled by the guide dog board. The resolution was sent to them. They've had a change in executive directors, but not too much has happened yet. But one of the issues we're going to have to sort of inaugurate next year, and that is, I think we're going to have to maybe I'll work with Mitch on it. Even if you're retired, we want to draft. We're going to have to draft a bill to. Increase the number of guide dog users on the board, which will require state legislation. So I think we'll work on – that's something we have to work on for next year. B2 is our IHSS Reader Services resolution, which we know about because we have our bill. B3 is a very long-term resolution that we have a lot of work to do on transferring the oversight of procurement from the Department of General Services to the Department of Rehabilitation for procuring goods and services for rehab clients, and that's just going to take a lot of work. That's nothing we can deal with in the short term. B5 is a resolution urging may be kind of mild, more business enterprise locations. Because we think the department and even the legislature has done an extremely poor job since we've lost about two-thirds of our locations. We don't yet have an answer back from the department on anything they're going to do in that one, so we're going to have to press them because we have submitted it to them.
And, Mr. Chair, we're also, this coming week, resubmitting it because our new director, if folks... haven't seen that announcement. The new director of rehab is Joe Xavier. So we will be resubmitting it to him in his new capacity as our director.
Okay. And the final resolution...
He already knows it's coming.
He should, because I think he knew yeah, we said it before. The final one from last year was the creation of a another GDUC entity, which of course gave us serious concerns, and we sent in letters to the appropriate entities and made appropriate notifications, and as of this time, there's no further word on that.
We now have another contact that that has received, resubmitted the resolution to, hopefully directly within the governor's office. And again, I have informed our new director that he will be receiving that again as well. So he knows that is coming, and we've already had discussions on it.
Okay, and now do we have time for Bernice's comment? Because she did want to make one on, I think it was Bernice.
Yes.
Because I am done.
Okay, thank you, Jeff. I want people to know that H.R. 37, I called Eric Bridges, 3749, sorry. I called Eric Bridges a few days ago. There are only three co-sponsors on this bill, and we need to get busy and push on this. We have drafted a resolution, which you now have, and I'm trying to rally the troops in the CCCLV organization to contact all of their legislators. But anybody else that's not a member of CCCLV, we would welcome your help, and we need to push hard on this so that we can get it through.
Thank you, Bernice.
Yeah,
in fact, I would also say we're actually trying to do a little behind-the-scenes work with someone we don't normally work with, Senator Feinstein's office. And
oh.
So if anybody has a connection to Senator Feinstein on this, that would really be helpful, because
yes,
it cannot hurt one bit to have something happen if we can do it.
Yeah.
So that's that.
And if anybody wants a copy of our resolution or any more background information about the bill, let me know. We'll get it to you. Yeah, Jane, we're going to need to call on you because Mike Thompson is one of the people on the committee. Pardon?
I'm done, Jean. It's up to you. It's back to you.
Let's say I've got
maybe overtime. I don't know.
What is that bill to? I'll get it. Hold on to that.
Oh. Gene has a habit of making American River with water. We had water up here. Poor Gene.
Jeff did it this morning.
Jeff did it this morning, Gene said.
Yes, I did it yesterday.
I guess they take
yesterday
turns.
I did it. We are in River City, you know. So, you know, it's...
So is that the end of your report, Jeff? Okay. Next, we'll have our American Council of the Blind report to be given by Ron Brooks. Let's give him a can.
Good evening. So before I start, I just want to take the speaker's prerogative to say, you know, I'm from Arizona. And all we hear is how you Californians need our water. And then I come here and you dump it on me. Come on now. All right.
So you know what you're missing.
Hey, at least I'm taking some water back to Arizona, so that's great. All right, well, I bring you greetings. So I want to greet
all of you, California Council of the Blind. I want to greet you if you are listening on ACB Radio. That's right. Give him a hand. Just remember, if they're on the East Coast, they probably need to talk to Vanda. So my name is Ron Brooks, and I bring you greetings from ACB President Kim Charlson, from the Board of Directors, the committees, and the staff who make up the American Council of the Blind. That's your organization, and they say hi. I also bring you greetings from my great state of Arizona, where I'm happy to say that our governor signed our budget today. So, that's right. Now, she vetoed a whole bunch of stuff, so we're not quite sure what's still in it, but we got a budget, so that's how we do it. So, first, I'd like to start by thanking Donna Pomerantz for inviting me to come here. I want to thank the CCB Board of Directors for letting her do it, but I have this impression that they kind of let her do a lot of stuff, but... the convention committee for being willing, and the Capital Chapter for your hospitality. Yay! And I want to thank all of you, because if y'all weren't here doing what you do, then I wouldn't be here either. And, you know, we're going to talk a lot about the fact that this is your organization and you guys make it up. And I know that I am the only thing between you and your elections. So my goal is to get you excited. I know updates aren't inherently interesting or fun, but I want to get you excited so that you're awake, so that you can vote for your candidates of choice, so that you can give great speeches if you are those candidates, and so that we can have a little fun as we close out this first night. I also want to thank my family back in Phoenix, my wife Lisa, my three kids, Casey, Andrew and Amanda, who'd better be in bed by now. because if they are not in bed, then Lisa's not actually listening right now. But they put up with a lot. My last job, I traveled a lot. I had changed jobs about 6 months ago to travel less, and what am I doing? I'm sitting in Sacramento talking to you guys. But they've been very patient with me, and I just wanted to acknowledge them, because frankly, without people at home, a lot of us can't do what we do, and so I appreciate that. So, my purpose here is to provide you with an update from your national organization, the American Council of the Blind. I'd also like to share with you, because I am a member of the ACB Board of Publications, I want to tell you what your BOP is doing to promote the message, the philosophy, and the mission of our great organization. Finally, I want to share how great affiliates make a great ACB. So let's start with, what is the ACB? And I know that seems kind of like a dumb question, because we all know that the ACB is the American Council of the Blind. You know about the national office in Alexandria, Virginia. You know about the staff in Washington, or actually in Alexandria, that does what they do, about Melanie and Eric Bridges and all the folks back there. You know about the National Conference and Convention that's taking place in July in Las Vegas at the Riviera. You know about the legislative workshop, and Jeff just talked about some of that, which I'm going to talk about as well. And you know about the ACB Braille Forum, and now the ACB eForum, and ACB Radio, and all the rest. But let me tell you just a little bit more. ACB, in addition to being a national organization, is comprised of 70 some odd state and special interest affiliates that really span the country, from Maine to California to Hawaii to Alaska, to my great state of Arizona, and everywhere in between. We represent guide dog handlers across the country and world. We represent library users. We represent people who are gay, lesbian, and who have alternate lifestyles. We represent everybody in our community who is blind or visually impaired. We have thousands of members doing the work of this organization on every level, from the national level on down. At the national level, we have, of course, the staff and the committees. We've got 42 committees and task forces at the national level doing, with hundreds of members working on dozens of issues, everything from telecommunications to transportation to healthcare to education, employment, you name it, there's probably an ACB committee that's working on it. And that's just, you know, some idea of who ACB is. So let's talk about some of those things that the ACB is working on. First, to start with legislation, Jeff introduced these bills, H.R. 3749, we talked about that. That's that Medicare demonstration project. Boy, is that ever high time. I mean, God, just demonstrate it. I think this demonstration is going to become permanent if we can just get it started. I want to talk for just a little bit longer about H.R. 4040, the Alice Cogswell and Ann Sullivan Macy Act. Boy, that is a mouthful right there. This is landmark legislation, and I know it needs some work, and it's going to take some time. But look at the lofty goals. Every child is counted and served. Each need is properly evaluated. States must do strategic planning to assess their needs and to plan to meet them. The U.S. Department of Education is responsible for holding states accountable to meeting those plans. Students who are deaf are actually trained by people who, you know, who are qualified. And blind students can receive state-of-the-art services and skills through a nationwide collaborative addressing their unique needs. You know, this is a great bill. It's going to take time. We're going to work on it, and we're going to get there. In February, this is another bill, and this is not a, I don't know if this bill has a number yet. Senators Elizabeth Warren, Democrat from Massachusetts, and Orrin Hatch, Republican from Utah, that means bipartisan, have endorsed the TEACH Act. And the TEACH Act is for higher education what IDEA was for students with disabilities in elementary and secondary education. Basically, the idea behind the TEACH Act is that course materials and curricula are accessible, that university services are accessible, and that educational technology is accessible to people with disabilities. Yeah, I remember back in my own state, right when I was moving there, the ACB was having a little discussion with Arizona State University. And may I please say, fork 'em devils. But we weren't saying fork 'em devils then. We wanted to fork the devils. So here's the thing. That technology is continuing to evolve. And what the TEACH Act is designed to do is to make sure that as it does, students with disabilities have access and can use that technology. So lots is happening on the legislative front. I'm sure there will be more in the future, and that's, you know, that we will need your help as we go forward with all of these bills. Structured negotiations is another big activity of ACB, and of course, I really probably don't need to tell you guys about structured negotiation, because I lived in California when structured negotiation got started with Linda Dardarian, Lainey Feingold, and others. Back, it's been like 20 years. It's really embarrassing to me to think about that. But, you know, ACB and CCB has been in the forefront of structured negotiations really since, maybe since it began. I don't know if Lainey and Linda invented it, but, you know, they've sure done a lot to move it forward. So you know about banking and about store accessibility and point of sales. Free credit reports, you know, go to annualcreditreport.com and you can get yours in accessible format. All of these things have resulted from structured negotiation. Other more recent efforts with structured negotiation is Weight Watchers. Weight Watchers has always, at least for a long time, had braille materials and large print materials, But now, thanks to structured negotiation, their online access is also there. And I was getting information from Kim to prepare for this report. And, you know, she was talking to people down, I think, in Florida at a recent convention. And there are people who actually said to her, hey, I'm using this. It's accessible. And that comes directly from structured negotiations. CVS.com. CVS, the pharmacy, they have a .com site. This is their mail order prescription site. They now have script talks available through mail order. Again, structured negotiations in action. MLB at bat. So I've got my iPhone up here. It's sitting here, and I'm not actually checking and listening to the game. So let me just tell you. Well, I'm just going to lay this right out for you. I travel, and I take my at-bat with me, and I have my alerts set so that I know when the Diamondbacks are doing what they need to do. All I need now is I need a team that can actually beat the Giants, and let us say it together, beat L.A.
There you go.
That's right. That's right. Don't hate, appreciate. All right. Okay, so so anyway, that's all coming from structured negotiations. But wait, there's more. ACB is now beginning a new effort with the Food and Drug Administration and product packaging experts to get accessibility into product packaging. So I got to tell you a little story. In 1996, I was on a date with my brand new wife, Lisa. We were out. It was one of those evenings out in West Palm Beach, Florida, where we lived at the time. We were in this really expensive restaurant. This is before kids and when we actually had money. And they brought me this bottle of Chateau Neuf du Pape 1994 from France. It had Braille on the bottle. I was like, that was in 1994. And I thought, that's really cool. And I thought it was kind of a novelty. Fast forward 20-some years. And I'm at my friend's house. We have close friends who are French. And she pulls out a bottle of pain reliever, and it's got Braille on the box. And I'm looking at this going, where'd you get this stuff? She's like, oh, it's everything in France. You go down the store aisles, and there's Braille on the boxes. So we got to have that here, because come on, does anybody really want to be beaten by the French? Come on. So another activity at the national level is the continuing implementation of the 21st Century Information Video Accessibility Act. That is continuing. That is, I think it's product by product, channel by channel, but we are continuing to work on that. Web accessibility, and my personal favorite is CAPTCHAs, and we continue. We've just got to keep working on those. I know we're working with Google on their CAPTCHAs. We're working, CAPTCHAs are the bane of my existence, and anybody who's on the internet, I actually can't get my LinkedIn working on my iPhone because I don't want to deal with a CAPTCHA. So, you know, we just have to keep working on those issues, and we are. So the ACB is not just about the ACB. It's also about the Board of Publications, which I was very fortunate to be appointed to in July of last year by President Kim Charlson, for which I'm just really grateful. And I'm not sure if she still is, but I'm really happy.
I am.
So let me just tell you a little bit about the Board of Publications. This is like bonus material because we don't usually talk about the BOP. The BOP is created in our Constitution, in the ACB Constitution, and it is designed to be an independent body. We don't report to the board. We don't report to the president. We have five members who are, two of us are appointed. I'm one of the appointed members because I can't get elected. And then we have three elected members. We have other representation from the ACB Braille Forum editor, and we also have representation from the ACB web administrator, and we have participation from a board liaison as well. So the purpose of the BOP. This is what we do. And I made this up. I read that stuff in the Constitution, and frankly, I was, you know, I almost needed to go figure out that non-24 thing after I read it. So here's what I wrote. Our job is to help ACB portray itself, okay, through information. And to me, you know, what we say and how we say it matters. What we share and how we share it matters. And our goal on the BOP is to give and share in such a way that promotes our mission. I'm sorry. Yeah, that promotes our mission and that encourages and engages our members. You know, information is power. And my job and the job of the BOP is to get information into the hands of the members so they can think and make decisions and become engaged. And our other responsibility is to take information from the members and elsewhere and put it in a place and in a way that promotes this organization and our mission so that we are more effective at doing what we do to promote the capabilities, strengths, and the great things that our community has to offer to the rest of society. So the BOP's focus, these are kind of the things we work on. First off, everybody knows the Board of Publications is responsible for oversight of the kind of the content, the format, and just, you know, the putting together of the ACB Braille Forum and now our ACB E-Forum, which I'll talk about in a minute. We are also responsible for giving input to the ACB Radio, both in terms of, primarily in terms of content, certainly not technically, although the ACB radio technical folks are involved with the BOP, but we do give them kind of feedback and guidance and our thoughts on how they proceed. ACB's website and email lists, and also ACB's presence on social media, which right now includes primarily Facebook, where we've got about 400 followers or 400 friends, and then also Twitter, where we're up to about 700 followers. So we have a very vibrant social media presence, and that's something that the BOP, we don't do it directly, but we do, you know, kind of give input to how that gets done. So our focus in 2014, and I want to start, and in my little note card here, I have the opportunity from challenge. A couple of years ago, the ACB at the national level fell on some pretty hard financial times. And the BOP was really given a challenge. And the challenge was you can't produce as much hard copy publication as you've been producing in the past. So you're going to have to cut. And at that time, the response of the BOP, and I wasn't on it, so I can't take credit for this, was to say, no, let's reinvent the problem. Let's change this. Let's figure out how to make, you know, lemonade out of these lemons. And what they did was they figured out that if they changed the forum at that time was a shorter magazine published more often. If we publish less often, we can actually increase the amount of pages that we produce. And then we can do an electronic magazine in the months that we don't do the forum, and we can actually give the organization more information. And that is exactly what they did, and that led to the birth of the ACB E-Forum, which, of course, is the alternate month, and then the ACB Braille Forum is, you know, so you have ACB Braille Forum is every other month, and the ACB E-Forum is on the other months. So that was a really good idea. But it does create certain challenges because different formats reach different people. Different people like different formats differently. Some people don't have access to the e-forum because they're not on the internet. All those kind of issues started coming up. So even though the intent was good and I think the solution was good, it created challenges that needed to be managed. So now we have this situation where, again, we're kind of being put in that position of do we continue what we've been doing and possibly run the risk of alienating members, or do we keep doing what we're, you know, or do we stop doing what we're doing and maybe cut information access in order to serve everybody equally? I personally hate no-win solutions. I don't like them. I think there's always a way to figure it out. So what we want to do now is we want to really assess both magazines, the Braille Forum and the eForum, from the inside out. We want to basically figure out what do people read, how much, how often, what sections do they like, what sections do they think are unnecessary, or maybe what do they think we have too much of. What format needs do people have? What preferences do they have? And remember, too, this is also happening at the same time the technology is changing. The cassette is becoming less prevalent. Digital is becoming cheaper. You know, all these things are happening. And so we want to kind of look at all this in light of what's going on. And our goal is, how do we shape the ACB, Braille Forum and eForum, you know, in light of all of those factors, so that we get the most we can get for what we have and that we meet everybody's needs for information. Now, the tool that we're going to use to do this is a survey. The survey that we are doing, and it's in kind of the final design phase, that the survey is, it will be an online survey. However, we are also producing it in accessible formats, which we will make available to anybody who requests an accessible format. And that means Braille, large print, audio formats, electronic, you know, whatever people need. We are also going to provide assistance by telephone. So if people don't have access to the internet and they don't, they're not comfortable doing a paper survey, they can call us and we'll do it by telephone, so they can do it that way. We are going to do town hall meetings at the ACB National Conference and Convention in Las Vegas. We're going to do two, one at the beginning of the conference and one at the end, to try to catch as many people as possible. And the goal, again, is to just get as much feedback as we can get from as many members as we possibly can. Timeline, our goal is to have the survey live in May. We will have it up for about 3 months. And the goal there is just, again, to give you lots of time to give us your feedback. It's not a long survey, but we want people to really have as much opportunity as possible. Our goal is to have all of the analytics from this survey by the end of September, so that we can spend the last quarter of this year really understanding what we've been told by you, our members, and so that we can shape the path that we take going forward beginning in 2015. Now, I want to kind of shift gears here and talk just about how great special interest, state and special interest affiliates like this one make for a great ACB. You know, this is your part, okay? This is what CCB does to make ACB great. Because, you know, honestly, most of the things that happen in our organization don't happen in Alexandria, Virginia. They don't happen in Washington. They don't happen on these, you know, interminable calls we have on national committees. They happen here. They happen in your local chapters. They happen in your organization. You know, the resolutions that you write that come up to our ACB Resolutions Committee, you know, that's where it happens. It happens here. And I just want you all to know that, and so that you can think about your part. You know, what you do matters. So how you do it matters. And if you see the ACB going in a direction that you don't like, then it's yours to change. This is your organization. It is what you make it. And for hundreds of people, you know, they're shaping it every day by their direct action and input. And, you know, I'm really excited to be here because you guys as an organization do tremendous amount to make the ACB great. CCB has been for a long time, certainly longer than I've been around, one of our greatest affiliates. You bring so much to the table, so much leadership, so much innovation, so many great ideas, sometimes a little bit of criticism thrown in. You make us better, and I just want to encourage you to keep doing it. I want to close again by thanking Donna, thanking you, the Capital Chapter. I want to just say this is a great state. It's the state where I joined the ACB. It's the state where I met my wife. It's the state where I almost got my master's degree. It's where I got my first job. So I love it here. And you guys are a great organization. Now, I urge you to work hard, to learn much, have fun, and have a great convention here in Sacramento celebrating your organization's 80th birthday. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Any questions for Ron? No?
There's a question. There is a question.
Okay. There's not any questions, so let's...
Yes, Mr. Chairman, Connie Gill, how can we get information, more information about the convention coming up without having any kind of computer? I recently moved, so I haven't had a Braille form since last August.
Okay. You know, I feel really stupid right about now, because one of the things that I did not mention is a new service. Is this on? Okay. A new service that we have called called Audio Now. And you are now able to listen to ACB Radio via your telephone. That is a slick, cool thing. I don't have the phone numbers. I can get those for you. But that is one opportunity. Washington Connection continues to have information. And, of course, the ACB Braille Forum, which is still available in all the traditional formats, also has lots and lots of convention coverage. So there are ways to do it. Again, when you do your survey, that's the kind of feedback that we want to get. One of the things, conventional questions, is who has computers? How many people, percentage-wise, actually have access to the Internet and how many don't? I think what we're going to see is that number is changing, but it's not changing as fast for our community as it might be for the general population. So that's the kind of feedback that we need to continue to hear.
And Jean, if I could, this is Donna, if I could say something as well. Connie, I think that was Connie, yes. Your chapter has submitted your address and all of your information from your chapter rosters. That's why those rosters are so important, so that we can make sure that folks are getting the information that they need to get, whether it be their ACB publications, their CCB publications. And one of the things that Ron hadn't shared is the ACB membership database. And so we now have this environment that we've put all of your information in. So let us know. I think Ed knows all your addresses and everything by heart right now. Because all of that from your rosters was inputted into that new database. So please let us know if you are not, if you do not receive your publications. You should be getting a BC soon. And our editor says that it's being mailed out on the 25th of April. So Connie, let us know if you don't receive your publication, and we'll need to refer back to your chapter roster on that. Thank you.
Thank you. Okay, it's time for the CCB report. Yes, I'm sorry. Question. Go ahead.
Oh, somebody's got the phone number that for Audio Now.
Okay.
So somebody has that phone number. So if we want
yes.
to
Yes, hi. This is Annette. I looked it up for you, Ron. It's if you go to the acbradio.org, it's right on their front page. That's ACB Radio. Oh, okay, oh, you're right. And that's why I looked it up for you. It is 231-460-1047. That's to listen to ACB Radio on an ordinary telephone, and it's called Audio Now. 231-460-1047.
Yep. And guys, I the caveat here, long-distance charges may apply. So be aware of that. If you have flat rate long distance, it won't matter. Otherwise, you should pay attention.
One more question.
One more question.
I almost did it in sign language. I'm sorry. 231-460-1047.
Okay.
Okay. Now for the the CCV President's Report, Donna Pomerantz.
There was actually one more question.
Okay, one more
and
question.
We could go ahead and take that, but I don't think they're mic'd. Yeah.
And if I can also have another glass of water.
Hello? No, it ain't. There it goes. Does your database include such anomalies as we have one person in the chapter that does not want to receive any magazines, and we have another person in the chapter that wants to receive the BC in one format and the other one in the other format, not the same formats. Is that a possibility in your database? Because I don't want them to come back to me.
What you submit to us for CCB, that's what we're giving for your Blind Californian publication. So, and if someone says they don't want to receive any publications, we can put that in the database as well.
Okay, are we finished with questions?
John? So we'll now move to the CCB President's Report. Donna Pomerantz.
Thank you very much. I know he wants a door prize. We'll see. We'll see if you guys are nice to me at the end of my report. Maybe I'll give you one. Bribery. Okay. I wish to start off this last president's report that I will be giving by saying a very large heartfelt thank you to my husband Mitch and my family for putting up with me for these few years, and also having the strength to exercise some tough love so that I can do the things that I need to do to take care of Donna, so that I will be able to continue being a part of CCB and making the new president's life very, very interesting. So I wish to thank Mitch and my family for all of their support through these years. As we all know, it is a bit shorter than what I had anticipated, but it is what's meant to be. And I think that we have started a lot of very, very good work, and moving towards some very good changes. So thank you. I I also wish to thank each and every one of you. Those who have had the strength to be extremely direct and honest with me, when you haven't agreed with some of the things that I have done, and when you have also come to me stated that you really liked the outcome of something that I had initiated. I want to thank each and every one of you for your communication, because that is the way that we know, number one, that you are around, and number two, you are the temperature gauge. You are the measuring stick. And so I want to thank each and every one of you, because what has taken place since 2011, when I first sat in this seat, is also because of you. None of this would have happened if it wasn't for the team. We are CCB, and thank you, each and every one of you, for your support. Our theme for this convention is celebrating 80 years of achievement, advocacy, and accessibility. That is our theme. Yes. Now, I am pleased to say that this theme has come from one of our CCB members. And I want to thank you, Vita Zavoli. For coming up with the winning theme. I also want to thank each and every one of you who submitted themes for this conference and convention. And I wish to thank each and every one of you that listened to the connection when I put those themes in, so that people who didn't use computers could still vote on the convention theme, which they would or maybe wouldn't be able to come to, but still would be a part of. Because of all of you, together, we have a wonderful convention theme. I hope that my predecessor would keep my predecessor and my successor, to quote some loud guy that I happen to love who said that at the board meeting. He reminded me of that, yes. I hope that this tradition of capturing, number one, the creative spirit of our membership in something as important as a convention theme will continue, because it helps people feel a part of the entire picture. I think that we've done this for a few conventions now, and frankly, this process, in my opinion, has yielded some very good themes, and this stays as a part of our history. I call the theme kind of the spirit of where we are in the moment. That's kind of the identifier of the pulse of where we're at. And I thank each of you for participating and making it happen. Ron mentioned structured negotiations. Ron mentioned CVS.com. That was ACB, and CCB was a part of that as well. Thank you, CCB. Hopefully, you've been able to go to the exhibits and experience Script Talk. I haven't been able to get there yet. I've got to get there tomorrow. When I've been in the exhibit hall, I've been at the CCB table selling tickets and stuff. So I do need to go around and you know, welcome them in Vision America and experience Script Talk. And I believe that they also have a new machine that they're using to create large print. And so we need to go and experience that as well. Hopefully we will be having some announcements to make. This does take time. Regarding Raley's and Rite Aid and Walgreens, please stay tuned. Now, I remember before I became CCB president, and I remember before I became CCB president, and I would hear, well, we're still working on this, and we're still working on that. And I remember what I used to think, oh my goodness, nothing's being done. Well, things are being done, and sometimes it just takes a little bit longer. But good outcomes and good things come from these negotiations. And I'm very pleased that Lainey Feingold and Linda Dardarian and her firm were silver sponsors for our convention. Please read the beginning of your program, because they put a message in there that they wanted everyone to read, because they couldn't be here, but they wanted to share that message with you. So definitely take that to heart. I hope that one of the things that I worked very hard on during my presidency was to begin to get convention sponsors. I was very excited that we had three this time. Previous convention, we had one. We've had two other silver sponsors. I hope that that will continue and that will grow. I know I'll do whatever I can to help that continue. So sponsorships, those are very, very important. One of the things that we have done during my presidency is we began to revamp our exhibitor packet, because what CCB was doing was focusing on getting the exhibitors, and it was an exhibitor packet. And I saw what ACB did, the expansion of that, bringing in the sponsorships, allowing exhibitors not only to exhibit at our conference and conventions, but allowing them to market their products. That's an expansion. That's bringing in money. That's giving them something else besides the opportunity to come and exhibit. So when you read those ads that you get in your convention with your convention materials, those people chose to market their product, material, trips, whatever it is that they've chosen to market, they gave to CCB so that you could read all of those materials. So that is an expansion that was started during my time as president, so that we could bring in outside revenue. We, at the president's dinner, it was very good to hear some of the very tough questions that came to the candidates at the president's dinner. One of the questions that we all must think about, and this is a very difficult thing. Yes, we are a strong organization of advocates, and we can be pretty willful when we need to be. However, we must bring in money so that we can continue. And what I heard at that president's dinner is we need to find outside sources to tap into, because we're all very giving to each other, but we need to work together to find outside sources. And I believe that during my presidency, we have started doing that. Hopefully, we will continue to grow it. And from what I heard at that dinner today, people have some ideas. I can't wait to hear them. I can't wait to see them begin to be put into action. We're moving forward. We're changing. We're 80 years old, but we're just beginning. Yes, we are. We have a strategic plan that we are going to begin to move forward and implement July 1st. We will be calling on some of you to get involved to help us move that plan forward. It can't happen without everyone coming together to move it forward. So we'll be calling on you. In closing, CCB has a lot to be proud of. A great deal to be proud of. But we have some difficult times ahead of us. And what I believe in is that the stronger we come together and communicate, we will move forward on a solid ground into new, undiscovered territory for the California Council of the Blind. We don't need to fear the unknown. We have the strength, we have the will, we have the tools, we have the desire. We talked about mentoring, we talked about leadership. The thing about the California Council of the Blind is there is a place for everyone. But the secret to the success is that we all communicate what we agree with, what we don't agree with, so that we can move forward, come close, and continue to do even more than what we have done before. And I want to thank you, each and every one of you, for giving me the opportunity to be your president. I'll do whatever I can to support the incoming president. You're going to have elections in just a few minutes. I want you to think about elections is the easiest part. I want each and every one of you to think about what each and every one of those candidates put down in their candidate statements, what each and every one of them promised. And we need to make sure that we all do what we say we're going to do. All of us together as a very, very diverse group of strong, powerful, people who are blind and visually impaired in California. We are the California Council of the Blind. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Donna. And thank you for your patience. I've been in a lot of pain. And so I would like to...
Gene,
I'm on the mic.
There you go.
And I want to find out if there's any questions for Donna.
Frank.
Thank you. Thank you for reporting on the status of the strategic plan. What is the procedure for individual members to obtain copies of the plan?
When the board of directors, after its working meetings to put dates and timelines to the different parts of it, each and every member who wishes to receive a completed copy can just contact the office and you can receive it in your format of choice. But that's the work that needs to be finished, that will be finished within the next few months, to date, to put timelines toward the different parts of the plan. And then anyone who wishes to have it can receive it in their format. Thank you.
Any
other questions?
Okay. Then I would like to call to order this portion of the evening agenda. And we'll turn over the microphone to Donna to conduct the elections for the state session.
Okay, Jean is giving the floor back to me. Now, what I want to make sure first is if everybody has their badge with their orange dot, because you won't be able to vote if you don't. Okay. All right. Apologies. Judy's keeping me awake. Okay. And do we have our volunteers in place? Okay. Now the first. Did folks have questions in the back? Margie must be back there. It's not Mitch and Margie. Okay. All right.
You have a question.
We do have a question. Okay. Please identify yourself by name.
It's Rob Turner.
Rob Turner.
With respect to Mike Keithley's question about the orange dot, I assume that the sticker on the paper portion of the name badge is the orange dot. Am I correct? Thank you.
Yes, it is. And I didn't hear Mike Keithley's question, so otherwise I would have answered it. Yes. If you take your badge out, you'll feel a raised circle on one of the corners of your badge, and that's your orange dot. Yeah, but I took it out, so you can take it out of the plastic. And Ron, you don't get one, I'm sorry. Unless you give me money. But then again, we might have a provision in our Constitution not to allow Arizonians, or I don't know. I need to find that article. Okay, folks. Any other questions? Because I'm hearing some. Okay. The first office up the slate from the nominating committee put forward for the office of CCB president the name of Jeff Tom.
Jeff basically said that he's in agreement with that sentiment. So, so we have the name of Jeff Tom that's put forward before from the nominating committee. Do we have... Wow, someone's calling in. We do not have vote by phone, thank you. Okay, thank you. Do we have any other nominations from the floor? Do we have any other nominations from the floor? You cannot nominate someone unless they have accepted. So, third time and final time, do you have any nominations from the floor? Oh, Frank?
I move that the nominations be closed and elected by acclamation.
Okay, Frank moves nominations be closed and Jeff Tom be elected by acclamation. We have several seconds. Any discussion? All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Abstentions? Motion carries. Jeff Tom is our new president.
Well, I do have a mic, although that's a dangerous thing to have. I appreciate the honor that you have done me to give you two more years of service. I just want you to know you have the right to expect the very best I can give, but I also have the right to expect the very best you can give as well. And if we get that, then all those things that Donna foretold of that would we needed to continue will continue, and we will be the type of organization we can be. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you. The next office is, the next position is the position of first vice president. And okay, so the nominating committee has put Gene Lozano Jr.'s name in for the office of vice president, first vice president. Do we have any nominations from the floor? Do we have any other nominations from the floor? Third and final time, do we have any nominations from the floor? Margie. Margie made the motion, and there were several seconds. I think that was the CCB women over there. Any discussion? All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Abstentions? Motion carries. Congratulations, Gene.
Thank you very much. And again, I want to apologize to all of you for being out of it this evening. I am just in a great deal of pain, as well as dealing with the lack of sleep. So I apologize for the discourteousness to the president and to you as members. Thank you for your understanding.
Thank you, Gene. The next office before us is the office of CCB Treasurer, and the nominations committee put the name before us of Peter Pardini as treasurer. Do we have any nominations from the floor? Do we have any other nominations from the floor? Third and final time, any nominations from the floor? Frank. several seconds. Any discussion? All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Abstentions? Congratulations, Peter Pardini.
Thank you all very much. I really appreciate it. And I'll do my best for the California Council of the Blind. And the treasurer's reports will be improved. But without, also, it takes a village to make CCB, and I expect everyone to do their part and support the activities of the California Council of the Blind. Thank you.
Okay, now we come to the director seats. And the first name that is before us for director seat is Vincent Calderon. Do we have any other nominations from the floor? Any other nominations from the floor? Third and final time, any nominations from the floor? Lena. Okay, Lena moved, and there were seconds from the right and seconds from the left. Any discussion? All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Abstentions? Vince, congratulations. Okay, Vince, are you at the streaming table?
Yeah.
I knew it. Go get him. A mic's on the way. And they are doing a great job at streaming. Vince and Louie have been streaming. And Vita Zavoli was part of the team, too. So go ahead, Vince. Start singing, and then when we hear you, then, you know.
No, you don't want to hear me sing.
Okay.
Not after a few drinks, anyway. Then you can hear me sing. I want to thank those that supported me in the nominating committee, and any of you who might have thought of running against me, I want to thank you more. So I will continue to do what I can do. As Peter said, he's going to give better reports. I'm going to learn to read Braille better, whether it's wet or dry, for those of you who were here yesterday. So I am here to do my part and to move forward with CCB. So thank you very much.
The next director's name who came forward from the nominating committee is Lena Dawes. And at this point, I wish to see if there are any nominations from the floor. Any nominations from the floor? Third and final time, are there any other nominations from the floor? Ah, that's Linda. Yeah, go ahead. Okay, we had several seconds. Any discussion? All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Abstentions? Congratulations, Lena. Yeah.
I would just like to thank everyone for your support once again, and I am very excited to continue serving as a board member and as a member of the California Council of the Blind. Thank you.
Thank you. Okay. Now, the next person who has been placed in nomination, this is for the seat that David Hanlon previously held. He Oh, David has chosen not to run due to health reasons. So the nominating committee has put the name forward of Frank Welty. Do we have any other nominations from the floor? Do we have any other nominations from the floor? Third and final time, do we have any other nominations from the floor? Is that Gabe? Okay. And we have seconds from the right and seconds from the left. All those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Abstentions? Congratulations, Frank.
This All evening, right. I thank the membership for your permission of my opportunity to serve this organization on the board. I do so with the understanding that you did so with certain expectations of performance on my part, and I challenge you to hold me accountable in 2 years.
Okay, thank you. Now, the next director seat, David Jackson, has termed out. And so the nominations committee has put forward the name of Paul Patchy Jr. Yes. Yes, he fed us well.
Okay.
Do we have any other nominations from the floor? Do we have any other nominations from the floor? Third and final time, any nominations from the floor?
I'm chair.
Mike. All righty. Do we have many seconds?
Yeah.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Abstentions? Congratulations, Paul. All right. Can we get a microphone over to this young man?
I guess the fortune cookies worked. I want to say thank you for this great honor, and I will work my hardest to help strengthen CCB, so thank you.
Yay! Thank you very, very much. Wow. Okay, Mitch Pomerantz seeks the floor. Should I give it to him? Yeah.
No. Let's at least have a vote.
Jeff is calling for a vote.
I have.
Yes.
I have a special announcement for my friend Ron Brooks and for all you San Francisco folks here. I thank Mona for telling me. But the Dodgers beat Arizona 6-0.
Wow.
Hey, Mitch. Just remember, when California goes floating down into the Pacific, we'll be selling real estate in Phoenix, Arizona.
There you go. Sacramento will be.
Who seeks the floor? Margie. Hold on.
You need to get to a mic, Margie.
Gee, Peter's turned into a girl. You need to wait for a microphone. Order. There you go.
Mitch's comment was not in line with CCB business this evening.
Good. Well, yeah. Yeah, yeah. Vita Zavoli.
I make a motion that we adjourn.
Hold on. Wait. I think our credentials chair has asked for the floor, so that kind of like supersedes the mass exodus.
Thank you. I was remiss in my report just to give out some thank yous that I really need to do because I don't know if this will be my last situation here, depending on what the new officers want. I'm here if you'll have me, but it'll be up to them. So I want to say thank you very much for everyone who let me nag you about getting your information and complying. And I also want to thank especially Donna for entrusting this responsibility to me and putting up with my questions. And
can we have order, folks? Order, please.
Thank you. I'd just like to thank Ed because, you know, Ed could have said, you know, it'd be a lot easier if I had someone I didn't have to send all this Braille to. But he's been extremely helpful and supportive. I want to thank my nominating committee and everyone who has been supportive and helpful and the board for supporting me with the issues that we had with credentials. And I love you guys very much, and I thank you for the opportunity for letting me serve. Thank you.
So before we adjourn, if we could do one door prize. All right. This is a Greater Bakersfield $25 Starbucks card and a mug. No. No, don't do that to me again. It won't work twice. Yeah, that's what Ed said. Okay. So here we go. Now, in 1934, supposedly, allegedly, in 1934, I don't know if he is a myth or what, but this they called this entity, this thing, was photographed for the very first time in, and you have to say your name, Gail? No.
Jeff.
Peter.
Mitch? Yes! Yes.
Yep.
No. The only one, wait.
Mitch.
Wait a minute. Wait. Hold on, guys. The only one that he knew was the Pat Boone one. That was the only one that he knew. So he can play.
Yeah, he got it.
Yes.
I say he got it.
But we're going to have a bunch more tomorrow at the banquet. And it was a Loch Ness Monster.
And the Giants are leading 6-4 in the eighth.
Oh! So now we have a motion to adjourn. We have many seconds. All in favor? Opposed? Abstentions? We are adjourned. Thank you.